Hey, it's fucking with Carl Guida. This is Carl. In this episode, I've got Neil Bengian from WanderingDesk.com back on again, and we talk about being foreigners in a strange land, specifically about being foreigners in Poland. We have kind of different experiences because I was born in Poland, I speak Polish, but I grew up in the US, came back here about 4 years ago, and Neil grew up in the UK, didn't speak Polish when he came here, so his experience is more kind of authentic foreigner, I guess you could say. And Neil had to catch a train, so we didn't get to everything we wanted to talk about. If you dig this episode, let me know, carl@guida.com, and we can do a part two. And if you dig the podcast in general, I'd really appreciate a review on iTunes. And if you don't want to leave a review, send it to a friend. That'd be cool. Enjoy. Here again, and since Neil happens to be a foreigner living in Poland, I wanted to talk about just living. To be honest, living in other countries in general as a foreigner. I've done it on a much smaller level, and although I would consider myself a foreigner in Poland, even though I was born here, I don't think it's the same experience as somebody who doesn't speak the language or is only just learning to speak the language. So, Neil, what do you got to say?
Oh, right, okay. I've got to say the whole thing while I have a prepared speech, actually.
Yes, so, I mean, just in general, I guess we could start with why Poland?
Why Poland? I was looking for somewhere to live that wasn't home. I'm one of these people. I need change. I need new things. Home is the United Kingdom, specifically England.
In case people can't tell by the accent, you know, just making sure.
And
it does sound like a very Asian accent, but I just wanted to, you know, be sure people understood what it means.
People usually say Burma from Burma. Yeah. So I'm from Northwest England, and I love my country and I've got a lot of family and friends there and stuff like that, but I've spent a lot of my life there, and I guess I'm one of these itchy feet type people, and I need to be somewhere else. I need to be challenged. I need things to feel a bit kind of different. I feel like when I spend too long back home in the UK, I guess everything sort of ends up feeling a bit like a rainy Thursday afternoon, and I can feel a little bit like I'm rotting and like my life's not going anywhere. I know that's kind of ridiculous.
I relate, so I understand that.
So I find that just the act of, I feel like moving around, going to a different place, that sort of energizes me, and I mean that in a very new age way.
Of course. As Jupiter, you know, sunsets, equator of the Neptune.
That's right. It took us a while to actually get this.
Is that
podcast.
How astrology works?
That's exactly how it works. It took us a while to get this podcast set up in back because I had to align all my
chakras
and all my little stones in front of me on the table here. So
we're bathing in crystal smoke right now.
That's right. Is that what that is? Isn't that illegal?
Not here.
And
no rules in Poland.
So
that's why you came here.
That's why I came here, to bathe in crystal smoke. All in inverted commas. It's turning into an episode of Breaking Bad, this, isn't it? I feel energized when I move to a new place. And there's a balance there because I don't like moving around too quickly. I like to stay places. I think stability brings amazing benefits. I stayed in Wrocław for just over 2 years. In that time, I did my first stint of acting silly little videos for like a language school, but that was the first time I'd done that and got paid for it. I did my first voice work. I started doing public speaking. You know, it's great staying around somewhere for a long time. You build up quality friendships. that you wouldn't if you're just always that person who's sort of zipping around everywhere. And, yeah. and so that's really cool. But then I also find that, well, I found after a couple of years, I wanted to move on again, and I moved to a different city because I felt like I'd almost lost my mojo a little bit. And you can call it, you know, maybe it's a curse, and maybe I shouldn't need to. I'm sure a lot of other people don't need to keep moving around like that, but personally, it's, you know, it works for me. So yeah, I came to Poland really for something like that. I knew I wanted to stay somewhere sort of medium to long term, and it had to tick a number of different boxes. And for me, okay, I'm a writer, and to write, people talk about being inspired, okay? And that maybe if you're a writer, you need to listen where that's inspiring. And I think for a non-writer, that might be, you think of somewhere that is unimaginably beautiful.
Like a beach town or something like that.
Well, that would actually be closer to the mark. But I think, for instance, I lived in Seville for a while, Sevilla in Andalusia in southern Spain. And people say, oh yeah, I can imagine that would be inspiring. And I think that's the wrong idea. I think maybe that works for some people.
Yeah.
But I think the idea therefore is that you see great works of beauty around you, and that inspires you to do great works. I don't think that is how it works.
Okay.
For me, if I've got everything in place, like you know, relationships, like as in friendships and you know, whatever else, and that's actually a big whatever else. What is this guy getting up to? You know what I mean? Like relationships and a girlfriend, or the opportunity to go dating, and which, you know, obviously not all cultures are going to provide sort of equal opportunities in that respect.
Yeah.
I like dancing, so like dance schools, dance classes, places where there's a good dance culture. Because there are some countries where if you're a man and you go out dancing, that's a bit weird.
Okay.
You know.
Like where?
Where have I been to that's been like that? I think Croatia was seen as a little bit
okay.
peculiar. Although if you actually saw the guys, I remember seeing salsa dancing, people dancing salsa and reggaeton in a square in Split, and there was like 15 women and like 5 guys, and I don't think they thought they were, you know, I think they were mostly probably quite happy with that ratio. So
speaking of dancing, just an aside about Neil, he spent quite a bit of time in Colombia learning how to dance, and wrote a book about it called Dancing Feet, which is F-E-A-T, little play on words there.
I regret that so much, just for the fact that I have to explain that every single time.
Hey man, have a name like mine and try to pronounce it and get somebody to spell it correctly. So, you know, I know the feeling. I've dealt with it every day of my life.
So, for me,
So what do you need in a place to live there? So we'll talk specifically about a place, I guess, that you don't speak the language, but that you can get along and do your writing, do your kind of work, and how did you kind of come about Poland as that place for you over the past 3 years or whatever it's been, I guess 3 years,
something like that. So my brother-in-law suggested it to me.
Okay,
it's that simple. I've done a lot of travel. I mean, it's obviously really comparative. You know, if you meet people, there are plenty of people who've been to over 100 countries, and you know, what do you define as a lot? But I've been to maybe about 60 places. And
that's nothing. I've been to 322.
That's impressive. You'll have to explain that to me sometime. There are those people on those lists. Don't
I mean, everywhere like, I go, every step I take, I consider a new country.
I have actually.
I've only taken 322 steps in my life.
Oh.
We're going off track. Anyway,
I've actually set up my flat as my kitchen and my bathroom are separate de facto states.
Yeah.
Register. You know, they're actually. I've informed the UN about them.
Good,
and
good.
They haven't been recognised by any other country yet. Well, the bathroom's recognised the kitchen, but I don't know if that counts.
One day,
yeah. So I can add those to my list. But the point was obviously to boast about how many countries I've been to in an underhand and very modest way. The point was to say that I've been to a lot of places, and in that time, in the last number of years, in the last sort of 5 to 7 years, I've kind of been thinking more and more about, is this a place where I could stay long term? I want somewhere that I can live. And I think I'll always love traveling and love adventure, but you want to have somewhere that's a base as well. I don't want to be just like drifting, you know, like a, I don't know.
What is it? A drifter.
Like a drifter, like a cloud, like tumbleweed, like, I don't know, like that
pollen?
Dog, that dog in that TV series.
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, what was that?
No idea. Lassie?
Not Lassie, but that would, I'd have a purpose in life then, wouldn't I? Like saving people.
Yeah, Lassie wasn't a drifter.
Lassie was like a hero.
Yeah, a hero.
Why was Lassie never recognized? I don't...
What do you mean?
Like as... You know,
as a hero?
Yeah.
I think she or he has been.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, what was that
gold medal of heroism?
Yeah?
Purple the Olympics.
Heart? Was that the war? Was that military? I don't know. Olympics. Got Olympic medals. In what? In saving people's lives, yeah. Or following a set of instructions that couldn't possibly be understood by a dog.
It's the People's Olympics. You can only find that in communist countries.
Really? So was Lassie?
I don't know how a dog got into the People's Olympics, but was it some kind of loophole?
I'm surprised that during the during that era in American politics, Lassie wasn't outed as a commie. Red under the bed.
Back in the 30s and 40s, the US was communist. Don't you know?
I didn't know that. No, I haven't really been following American politics that well.
So. It was a communist state. Anyway, again, we're moving off track. So back to Poland.
It's like walking a cat, isn't it, Carl? It really is. It's like two cats trying to walk each other.
Yes.
Yeah, I decided that I thought Poland would be a good place. My brother-in-law recommended it.
You recommended Poland in general,
He actually recommended Kraków. Okay. And I went to Kraków and I loved it, but it was a little bit too touristy for me.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be, if I'm going abroad somewhere, I don't want to be surrounded by my compatriots, but actually in the worst kind of advert for my country that there is, you know, which is...
Because it's a very big... It's any time you hear like somebody going... I would say backpacker, a traveler, whatever you want to call them, going to Poland, it's... Oh, I'm going to I'll say the American pronunciation, Krakow.
Krakow, yeah.
And yeah, so I think that is the destination, and it has become that. And it is, like, it's... I was there, I guess, 6 months ago, and it's a beautiful city, and it's great, but it is very touristy, and it definitely has that contingent of, is that the right word? Of just the drunken Westerner kind of coming in and, you know, getting leathered.
Well, and especially in terms of my own country, we have this idea of the stag party or the bachelor party, yeah. Pre-wedding party, and it's basically pick a big city that Ryanair does a good service to, and then you will get a lot of people there.
It's probably even cheaper to do it in Poland than it is to do it in the UK, because you can buy a beer for not even a quid, and you're not going to do that.
I like your use of the word quid as well.
I do it on purpose when I'm around you.
Thank you.
So you're welcome. I'll make you feel comfortable.
I think you feel comfortable. Maybe a cup of tea here. I'll be with my almond milk. And it is a bit like saying quid in American accent, I suppose. So
Krakow was too touristy
for me, and I'd heard from a few people. It had sort of soaked into my subconscious that Wrocław could be a good place. Yeah. And so that's why I came here. So it's having a number of different things that come together. You want a place where it's easy to meet people, where you can date, where for me it can provide all my needs. And as someone who's, like, for instance, I like dancing, I wanted to keep that up. So having dance schools and having opportunities to go out and practice that and whatever, that's important. I think if someone was into trekking and things like that, it probably wouldn't tick the boxes. You want to live in a city near the mountains or something like that. But it worked well.
And a lot of people, I think, people who haven't been to, I guess, Eastern Europe in general, Central Europe, whatever you want to call it, but Poland in particular, I think a lot of people don't realize that it's a very modern country, and these are real cities, and this is, you know, like Wrocław is a kind of a mid-sized city, 650,000 people, something like that. So it's generally going to have anything, whatever your stereotypical idea of a city is, it's going to have whatever that is.
All of those sort of modern trends that you see, you get. So you have obviously the food trucks, you've got kind of cool cafes and and you know all these kind of things going on.
I don't like cool cafes. I like uncool cafes.
I like pretentious cafes. I'm a big fan of pretentious little cafes.
Well, my favorite cafe.
I'm not even joking.
My favorite cafe, which is the only one I go to, is what I would call the hipster cafe, which is Vinyl, because it's amazing and.
Yeah,
that's that.
Hipster cafes for the win. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Big fan of hipster cafes. I've been on a big tour around Poland recently for a book that I'm writing. I went to approximately, not boasting obviously, I went to some. I've been to so far nearly 100 different towns, cities, and villages in Poland. And what I found out about myself is that as much as I like to think I'm an adventurer, I really like pretentious little cafes. And if there aren't any, then I feel like quite upset.
Every village Neil went to, he would ask the townsfolk, where is your pretentious hipster cafe?
And
unfortunately 90% of the time he was disappointed.
So I just kept moving on. The Littlest Hobo, that's the series.
The what?
The Littlest Hobo, you're not aware of that? I thought it was in America, I don't know.
Maybe. That shows what I know about American culture.
I don't know where it's from, actually.
So talk about...
Never watched it.
What's that?
I never even watched it. I was just aware of it. And the titles. And then it turned out.
Never heard of it. But cool. Littlest Hobo.
Littlest Hobo.
Mark it down on your calendars.
Add that dog to your list of animals.
So talk about living in Poland, not speaking language. Like, how easy is it to get what you need, get around, rent a flat, stuff like that, and meet people, date stuff, and stuff like that as well.
So one of the first things I noticed about Poland, I've been here over 3 years now. I've sort of shared my time a bit between here and the UK, but one of the things that struck me straight away and why I really liked Poland straight away was the. I find it incredibly easy to make friends here. Really easy. You know, I love Spain. I love Seville. I haven't seen a lot of Spain, but Seville, Andalusia, I know well. Oh my God, what a city. Fantastic. And I met, there's some really great people there and whatever. But I didn't find it very easy to actually make friends there. And I think there's a difference. There's a cultural difference there.
Okay.
Which is that people tend to have social circles.
Right.
And you kind of, it takes a while to be, you people are very warm and friendly.
Yeah.
But then it actually, for that to become something more than just, hi in the street, then you kind of, you become part of a circle and then you'll get invited out.
Right.
Well, you can't, I'm not, that's not what I'm used to. That's not what suits me as the kind of way that I like to meet people.
Yeah.
I found in Poland, and I'm sure sociologists, anthropologists, whatever else might have there might be a specific terminology to describe this, but I find it's more like network. It's more like a grid almost, And or if you have circles, they're much looser and they're kind of much more overlapping.
Interesting.
So, for instance, let's put it this way: I had more friends, stroke acquaintances, whatever. I knew more people after a month in Poland than I knew after 7 months in Spain.
Now, would you say this was mostly Polish? People or foreigners?
Mostly Polish
people. Okay.
But foreigners too. And
because Poland in general, or Polish kind of culture in general, I think has the stereotype is that it's kind of closed off and people really keep to themselves. And I personally would agree with that. Like a lot of actually conversations I've had with Polish people is that, that's kind of how we are. But I think that's how a lot of people are. I don't think it's just Poland. I think maybe it just depends on personality and how you navigate those situations.
Yeah, it's hard to, it's a difficult thing to sort of map out because...
I mean, it depends on where you're meeting people too, right? Like if you're going to an event from a Facebook group that is open to, foreigners as well as non-foreigners, then of course it's going to be easier to meet people at a place like that, right?
I felt like, when I was in Seville, I felt like I met a group of people. I got speaking to some people in a pub, and I ended up becoming part of this sort of little circle of people, and that was great. But I found when I went to events via Facebook and other these sort of meetup things of different types where I wanted to try and integrate with the society, what I felt like was the people I tend to be integrating with and language meetups and things like that were other people on the periphery. Mm-hmm. I felt like all the people on the periphery were making a big effort and were just attracting other people on the periphery.
Okay.
Whereas if you go to the bar, if you go out and you're on, en la calle, as they say, you know, you're on the street, so you're going around having tapas and things like that. All these people that you see out there, all these sort of typical civilians, is that the anglicization? These, you know, civianos, they will be, these people aren't accessible via social networks. If you want to talk to them, you're just going to have to go up and talk to them, you know, and maybe that's not going to be at the same time. That's not necessarily going to be a way to integrate, you know. So, whereas in Poland, I found, and I don't know how much has changed because time moves on while you're doing this. And so I moved to Poland. It's not like these weren't happening at the same time. Technology moved on and whatever. But I found here much easier to meet people through Facebook events and all these sort of things. One thing that Facebook have rolled back on, I think because of privacy concerns, and I think also they stopped the deal with, was it Microsoft? I think they had Bing search integration or something. But they used to have this thing called Graph Search. Mm-hmm. And Graph Search was amazing because you could basically search on any city or any location within a set period of days, and it would throw up all these events. You go, oh, fantastic. And then you just turn up to events.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I found that a really good way of meeting people. Yeah, of course, you are still meeting the kind of people that's happy to go to that kind of event. But if you go to enough variety of things, you know, I showed up here, I would go to dance classes. I joined TEDx, so I did a turn being the host of TEDx, the MC type character. I always find that strange. Host doesn't sound right. It sounds like you're inviting everyone to your house. MC sounds like you're rapping or something, you know. Which
Master of ceremonies,
Master
right?
of ceremonies, exactly.
I think
master
people get what it means.
So again, I feel like a ringmaster, you know, the whip, which I was, but that was just part of the act. It wasn't really, it was nothing to do with the name. And so these different, you know, through these different things, going to different language meetup groups, just actually doing the whole thing, which I've since learned is called social skydiving, where...
Yeah.
If it
just
feels,
throw yourself into a situation where you're kind of uncomfortable and kind of go at it.
Just, I'm in a cafe and you see some people turn around and you have a legitimate question to ask. Legitimacy is a really important thing for comfort. You don't have to have it. You can go out your comfort zone even more and just turn around and say, hey.
Yeah.
But if you have
what time is it? I know I have a cell phone on me and a watch.
But I'm going to ask them what time it is. I think that's a really cool thing to do. And I do that a lot. And if I have a question about what's a cool restaurant, I can go on TripAdvisor or I can turn around and say, hey, do you know a cool restaurant here? And I'll get some genuine human answers from some locals.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll also...
Well, TripAdvisor is skewed because it's always like the best places might be very good, but they're the best for... tourists.
And when you live in a place, you can look at the TripAdvisor list for your own city and think,
how's
that number one? Exactly.
Yeah.
And you might not go to anywhere in the top.
Although
10.
In Wrocław, the TripAdvisor, I think, is pretty solid as far as like some of the restaurants that it recommends on the top 10 are all, I think, all good.
So I think on the same theme, I'm going to be wary because I need to draw you back in at something to get your own views. I think the thing that's one of the things that's difficult is, so you have the things like that which are fantastic.
Well, how's the language? Like, how do you find just the getting on with just in English?
First of all, it's Poland specifically. So, yes, it varies from country to country.
Yeah,
I think Poland is great in terms of the pretty much anyone educated under the age of, say, 35 is going to speak English. They may complain or sort of have a caveat that their English isn't good enough, and then they will proceed to
speak
you know, almost flawlessly, maybe get the odd sort of preposition wrong or something like that. But you know, that makes life easy. And then the obstacles you come up against are when you go into shops and the people working who are staffing shops are from a generation or two older. And but then that's fine.
Or if you need to get anything done officially with the government, then it runs into some issues.
Right, that would almost seem to be specifically set up to test your
to test your
ability,
your
motivate you to learn the language slightly more quickly.
Yeah. Which I mean, we're not saying a foreign country should kowtow to non-native speakers, the thing is, they make it difficult even for Polish speakers here, so you know, it's not exclusive to non-English speakers. But I don't, like, to be honest, like, when I go try to get something done in one of the offices, I'm like, God, if I didn't speak Polish, this would be, I would cut myself here. I don't know what I would do, because it would be so frustrating, because it's already so frustrating when I speak the language and I can get my point across and I can tell the people what I need and what I need to get done, and it's still an issue.
It's an interesting one, because I think with Poland specifically, as an outsider, then the instinct will be to say, oh, here we go, it's a throwback to this bureaucracy, it's a throwback to communism. But actually, I think one of the things is that you don't often have to deal with these things in your own country. So you don't, a lot of times you don't know what our own bureaucracy is like. And actually, when you hear about, I remember there was that meme of there was a Polish guy in the UK, and he had all these lists of things that are the little quirks that he pointed out about the UK, some positive, some negative. And one of them was, Was it to do with customer service out there? And you're just thinking, I don't know that I agree with that. But, you know, for instance, when you go to, people tell me about, like, I've heard people saying about numerous other countries that they've gone to, that the bureaucracy is pretty hefty. But I think that's probably just the nature of bureaucracy. It's hard to know. It's been tricky here.
Yeah.
Certainly. And trying to, I've had to get Polish friends to help me to fill out the forms and things like that, but yeah, it's hard to know how much of that is specific to Poland or how much of it is just specific to
obviously any kind of government idea of has bureaucracy. Like, I'm dealing with tons of bureaucracy in the US right now. It's like trying to get a visa for my wife, and it's a long, slow bureaucratic process. So it's, I think bureaucracy is generally just the name of the game, but sometimes I feel like they're playing a joke on us here. Like for example, I had to go get something done like 2 weeks ago, or my wife had to go get something done. So she went to the office that she needed to get it done, and the cashier, which is always in a separate area of the building, closed two minutes before she got there. Like, the cashier was just closing the door as she got there, and it closed before the office closed. So it's like she got there in time, but the cashier closed like an hour before the office closed, so she couldn't pay for the thing she needed to get done at the office. So then a week later, I went and tried to get it done for her. I paid at the cashier. I went to the, I waited in line, got to the lady I needed to get the form done, registered with or whatever. And she's like, "Oh, you can't do this for your wife. You need a I guess in English it would be called like a power of attorney." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Oh, this is, she already filled this out. She signed it. It's all paid for. Like, it's all I need is for you to stamp this thing." And she's like, "No, she has to come." So obviously she went back, and I feel like stuff like that. I know it's not just here. It's just that I'm recently dealing with it, and it's just like, sometimes I think these kind of things are just put in place to play a joke on us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the language thing is an interesting one, because when you arrive here, you're expected to register within 3 months of arriving. But it's and there's a difficult one, because I do believe that if you're going to go to a foreign country, then as part of an intention to integrate, and as respect to the country that you're in, even if everyone or if a lot of people around you speak good English, then I think the most basic, you should learn please, thank you, and pleasantries, even if you then start blathering on in your own language. I think it's arrogant to sort of turn up and just expect everyone to speak your own language. But at the same time, one of the things that's specific about somewhere like Poland is that the language itself is quite impenetrable. I mean, this is sort of the point we were going to get onto earlier, wasn't it? The language itself is very difficult. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the source of this is. It was
there's always sources about like the most difficult language and stuff like that.
Well, the metrics that I read, and I've read different ones. Read ones that say, my Polish friends tend to take a certain pride. Quite a few of my Polish friends, anyway, take a certain pride in the fact that in the ones that show Polish is the hardest language because they speak it fluently. So there's these T-shirts
joke among Polish speakers, native Polish speakers, is nobody knows how to speak Polish correctly. Okay. So,
and you have those T-shirts that my soup Polish is my superpower and things like that.
I've never seen that.
So I think I've seen ones where let's say Polish is easy and has a list of Polish words that, you know,
there you,
use,
go.
you wouldn't know where to,
I mean, to be honest, like in a situation where you're a foreigner and you need to register, for example, in that country, then especially, to be honest, especially in a country that's in the EU, it should have other languages available. I don't know if they do. Do they have other languages available for forms that you need to fill out?
Well, this is the thing. My experience of it was, going back on my memory now, but the form was in Polish and I had to fill it out in Polish.
Yeah.
And the point I was going to get to was that you need to do this within 3 months.
Yeah.
And then the question is it realistic to learn Polish or is sufficient Polish to answer the form in 3 months? But at the same time, I don't think that they should like set the whole systems up to deal with, you know, to speak English because I
no,
do.
No, I don't mean right. English.
Every
EU language.
Yeah,
it should have.
You would
at
think
this point.
The amount of bureaucracy that would involve. You think they would love that? You know, you think the bureaucrats specifically all over the world would be thinking this is fantastic. This project will never end.
I mean, to be honest, I understand not having that set up within the first few years of being in the EU, but it's been 12 years in the EU. So at this point, it's you know, like I went to get my birth certificate and our marriage certificates, and they have options for multi-language. And when you get the multi-language option, it's kind of weird. I don't think they did it completely good because it's all in Polish and then it's all in French. And then there's a translation guide for every other EU language. So it's kind of weird that they I'm assuming French because of Brussels, because of Belgium, but it was kind of interesting. And then there's this one paragraph that's only in Polish and French. And so for somebody like me who needs the document, for example, translated into English, I can't use this document, even though it has the English translation, because it has a whole paragraph that's only in Polish and French, and they didn't include translation for that. So just stuff like that is kind of weird. But I think in general, if you're in the EU, I'm not saying a country in general should accommodate foreigners or accommodate English speakers specifically, but once you're in a kind of a de facto or organization like the EU, I don't know what you want to call it exactly. I was going to say de facto country, but you know, that kind of sounds weird. I think you should accommodate, especially if you're expecting them to register. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. Let's move on. We've been kind of jamming on this issue for a bit. What's it like just finding a flat as a non-speaker?
Yeah, I think the thing is that straight away you hit up against the thing of cultural differences, and you realise that cultural differences are, you know, they apply to so many different things. And one of the things with flats, for instance, is that, you know, the housing situation in Poland is quite different to the one in the UK, and people's expectations are different. So in the UK, even as a student, even in poor quality housing, you would expect to have, you each have a bedroom to yourselves. Yeah. I do know people who shared rooms at university, but it is quite unusual. It's normal you have a room to yourself. If you're in halls of residence, that's a different situation. If you get a house, you got a room to yourself and you have a lounge, mm-hmm. sort of common area. And unless someone tells you, know, you learn the hard way about these things unless someone tells you. I mean, you can argue this is part of the fun and adventure of getting used to a new place, and it's also one of the challenges, which is that you discover specifically in Poland that people don't tend to have a lounge. Every room is utilised, and sometimes if the room was set up as a flat with a lounge but then it's been changed to shared accommodation,
yeah.
you'll actually have someone who has a room which tends to be the rent is slightly lower, but other people have to go through their bedroom to get to the other bedroom.
Oh wow. Okay.
So you'll get that set up. You have very common with students, maybe less so but still happens with young professionals, basically anyone with not so much money to spare. You know, you look on, say, Gumtree or one of these sites, you'll see these rooms going, you'll see it for 300 zloty, which is less than £60. It's probably about €60, I guess, or something like that. And you think, wow, that's cheap. And then what you find after a while is you realise that this is a bed in a shared room. You're getting a bed in a room. You're not getting a room. So
my first flat 6 years ago was I rented a room in a flat, a two-room flat, and it was 150 US, basically. It was 450 zloty. So actually, at the time it was 150 US. Now that's like 100, not even 100 US. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. Like you, it's common to share a room, and the prices kind of maybe reflect that. They look maybe cheaper than they are. And is that what you're getting?
When you see a price that looks abnormally low, yeah. I thought, why is that so cheap? Why is that one 300 when that one's 900? And that's such a big room. And then you realize
meet your roommate Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
You can hold hands while you're sleeping.
Well, this is it. And one of the things I hear then as well, because then you have this whole other culture coming up around that, which is that, you know, so you have students, and obviously students have girlfriends and boyfriends, and then what happens when they want to have a night in together playing Scrabble, shall we say? And the answer is that I'm told it's quite a common thing.
This is a children's show, Neil. Please be careful with your words.
Sorry, not Scrabble, chess, obviously. And Grapple, is that the game? And so the... you know, quite a common thing is to pay for your roommate to go out and go to the cinema. Why don't you go to the cinema tonight? Maybe you won't want to come back until like 1 a.m. You know, so you have that sort of thing going on. Then you have the other thing, which is
how easy is it just to find a flat and find a flat?
It's easy to see one on Gumtree and that kind of thing. But actually, what ends up happening is you tend to end up with flats being passed on, I think, from foreigner to foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that being that they'll advertise it themselves when they're leaving on Facebook or wherever else.
Yeah.
Because you have this impenetrability of the language thing going on.
Right.
And it creates this... When you're going to have to phone up about a room, I think you feel that little step, that little kind of hesitation, because you've got to speak to someone you don't know about, someone you don't really know about. You're not even sure if you're going to like the room anyway. You've all these little things that have created a small obstacle. But hey, you do it anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you've got to do it in a foreign language, and you have all sort of, and there are all these other sort of cultural obstacles, then it becomes harder to do it. I've had it where I've sort of procrastinated for days because I'm thinking, I know I can't have this conversation.
Yeah.
I know I can't do it. And then you're trying to ask people to help you.
I procrast for days finding flats. Even I speak Polish just because it's such an annoying situation to find a new flat.
It's stressful. It's stressful.
I mean, there is one way to solve the problem very easily. It's expensive. It costs 1 month rent. You can hire a real estate agent. What are they called here? Anyway, you can hire a
Nieruchomości.
You can hire a real estate agent that speaks English, that will take you around to flats and find a flat for you. So that's an easy way if you want to spend. It's basically going to cost about 1 month's rent to do that for the agent fee. Which I mean, it can depend on the flat. It can get up to, we'll say, $1,000 or so. So it's not. Maybe that's a little over. Not quite that, but still, depending on what situation you're in, it's not a very good option.
I think so. Yeah, you've got that sort of thing. I think finding a room. Yeah, it's difficult and it's stressful. And then once you're in place, it puts you off moving anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can end up thinking, oh, I really want to move, and you're thinking, oh God, you know, it's just easier not to.
Yeah.
But like, it's always easier not to, isn't it? But it's much easier not to. That's the difference. Yeah. And then as my Polish has improved, it's a bit different now. Because when I was trying to find my second place, I phoned up and I explained, you know, I don't speak good Polish. I said in Polish, and the person on the phone said, you know, and I was saying, yeah, I don't know, do you think we can still do something, you know, like that? And they were saying, no, no, no. And I was like, okay, thanks, bye. And then later I realized that no means yes. It's just no is what Polish people say to prompt you to carry on.
Well, because it's not no, it's not. No,
no, right? it's like, go on. Yeah, I'm listening, I'm here, I hear you, whatever. Yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah. It's just like a kind of...
It's kind of like in Bulgaria, they shake their head yes and nod their head
okay.
No.
Yeah.
And we were getting a cab to the a taxi to the train station, and I was like, can you take us to the train station? And I said it in Bulgarian. I was, you know, I looked it up and, you know, how to say it. And he shook his head. I was like, damn it, because it was like 6 a.m. and there was no other cabs around. And And then he jumped out of, because we started walking away because we needed to get to the train station. And he jumped out of the cab. And he's like, no, you know, because he said yes. But so I can understand the same situation with the no.
Or the other one with the coffee, which I had in a hostel, with where someone had just put the kettle on, or it had been going for like 20 or 30 seconds or something, and I said. There was a German lady who'd done it. She was sat waiting, and I said, "Do you mind if I?" I knew she'd only put enough water in for one cup. I washed it out, and I said, "Do you mind if I? Do you mind if I add some more water so I can have a cup?" And she said, "No." And so I took it, and she was like, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And she was really angry. And it was like, "But you said you didn't mind." But she'd answered a different question. She answered the question she was expecting, which was, is it okay if, and the answer was no. And of course, there's another cultural difference there, which is that in the UK, you wouldn't say no. That you might as well just walk up and hit someone around the head with a massive fish. You know, yeah. You just like, you'd say, well, I'd really prefer it if you didn't.
Where was this?
It was
in Poland?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was in Hungary. So it was almost irrelevant because it wasn't really to do with Hungarian culture, but it was a German lady, but she we miscommunicated.
Of course.
And also added to that with the, when someone says in the UK, you can say no if it's a nice thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if someone says, do you mind? No, not at all. But if it's a nasty, if it's like,
do you mind if I have your shoes?
No, can I join you at your table?
Yeah.
No. I mean, or even just no. It's just like, you might as well just get up and hit them. I mean, it's an act of verbal violence in the UK. You know, this nice. Is, I had a
I
girlfriend.
Like, I like that phrase, verbal violence.
I had a girlfriend who was like, got frustrated with me we were just dating for a short while, to be honest, but she would get annoyed with me for saying, I'm fine. Oh, do you want this? Oh, I'm fine. Yes or no? Yes, I don't know what that means.
Right,
it's like, and it's like, oh, yeah, and you start to question your own sort of cultural mores. So I think you have these things that you have to get used to as well, which is that in Poland people have a bluntness and more directness than we have in the UK, and I think that's sort of the sort of thing that you have to acclimatise to. You know, with the weather, for instance, when I first arrived in Poland, I had the thing where it was -6, and I arrived at my guest house. And I said to the receptionist, just making small talk.
Yeah.
Typical, I hadn't even thought about it. Typical British thing where we mention the weather. And the weather is actually just, it serves the same function as how are you in a lot of countries, which is, we don't, not really, it's not, the question just, is not what it is at face value. It's just sort of social exchange is what it is. And so I said, oh, it's really cold outside. And she looked at me and she was like, it's not really cold. And this told me two things. First of all, -6 is not really cold in Poland, which was like, uh-oh. And the second one was that people don't talk about weather the same way. That is a cardinal offence in the UK. You can't, you always agree.
Okay.
You can agree and then say something which sounds kind of, which is on the face of it is contradictory, but you have to agree. Right. So if someone says, oh, it's really cold, say, yeah, it is really cold. But I think it's going to get a lot colder. You know, that's how you would handle that in British English. But in Poland, although they talk about the weather, they don't have the same set of rules. And I want to use it as a small example. You know, it's quite easy to be, it sounds like a small thing, but when you say like, it's really cold, and someone's like basically saying, no, you're wrong. it feels like an affront as an English person. But the thing to remember, of course, that this is a country of 40 million people, and you're the outsider, and you're the one who has to get used to that.
Yeah.
And
I think that's good advice no matter where you're traveling, right? But on that note, and I missed my chance when you were talking about being blunt. I was going to just cut you off because Neil has to go catch a train, and to be blunt, we gotta stop this podcast. Maybe we'll do a part two, or maybe we'll continue this with some fancy editing in the future. So, Neil, thanks for sharing your little that really sounded kind of sunny. Your little Poland story. thanks for sharing your experience.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening. Peace or bye. Why did I say that?